One of the things that you talk about in that book is the types of investors that they are. A lot of our participants who've been to our programs, both Millionaire School and the Millionaire Mind Intensive, one of the key elements that they learn there, of course, is the understanding of the importance of passive income. Of what?
Passive income.
So one of the things I'd like to ask you is, firstly, what kind of investors are there? And if people are versed in the idea of passive income, what are some of the steps they should begin taking now to either begin their move on passive income or to develop it much more strongly than they are right now? What are some of the things they can do, ways of thinking, ways of being?
Well, there's two distinct types of passive income. One type of passive income is income from royalties. For example, the passive income from my books is obviously in the millions of dollars per year. And then the other type of passive income is passive income from real estate. So I have millions of dollars of passive income simply because while in school, my teacher always told me I was stupid and incompetent and lazy. So I decided that I would take being stupid, incompetent, lazy to new heights of extreme. And that's why I'm a good investor. That's why I have so much passive income, is basically because I'm incompetent and because I'm lazy. I mean, I don't like working. I sit at home and the money comes in and I go out and I do what I want to do. But passive income, the most important reason for it is called freedom. So you can have passive income from real estate, but unfortunately, this is what most investors do not know, and I don't know the Canadian law on this, but in America, passive income from stocks are called dividends. And the problem with dividend income from stocks is that it's taxed at a different rate than passive income, that income from real estate. So it's only now, like I think it was yesterday, day before yesterday, they fired Secretary of Treasury Paul O'Neill. And what that means is finally the administration is going to get along to saying to investors in stocks, who have been the biggest losers of all time, that they're going to start changing the investment in stocks focus from capital gain to dividends instead, which is what they should have always done anyway. Because when I invest in a piece of real estate, it's only a piece of real estate, just a piece of sticks and stones and dirt. And it's what's important is the dividend from the stock or the passive income from real estate. That's all I care about. I don't care if the price of stock goes up or the real estate goes up. I just want my passive income or a dividend. So what's finally going to happen in America, it seems, in the next year or two, is that income from dividends will be taxed at probably a rate of 20% per year. But still, the stock investor is going to lose, because very simply because a real estate investor with passive income can zero it out. I can pay zero taxes simply because I have two types of passive income, one from royalties from my books and games, and other products, and the other is passive income from real estate. So you have to know more than just passive income or real estate. You really do need to know corporate law or corporate entities plus tax law, and that's what makes you rich.
That's one of the things that I believe that I found out as you create, you know, when you go through your different stages, as I'm sure you did, Robert, as you create wealth, as you start to, you know, do a lot better financially. Originally, my financial literacy in the tax arena was totally zero, and I was a total avoider. I didn't want to have anything to do with it, and just gave it to my accountant, and I couldn't understand why I was still paying half my money away. As I began to make more and more money, and started giving more and more money to the government, all of a sudden I took a much greater interest in that arena. And I realized right then and there, as I'm sure you'd like to, as part of your message, is that, you know, You have to work twice as hard to make the same amount of money if you don't understand taxes.
Yeah, especially if you're a Canadian.
you can stop laughing anytime now.
I love Canada. I have corporations up there. I have corporations in the Yukon territory, Ontario, as well as British Columbia, but I don't earn my money there. I mean, yeah. Your tax laws are horrible.
But isn't it true, though, that you know, wherever you are, there's going to be taxation, basically, and you just have to understand, you have to be involved in choosing elements of income that are taxed at a less rate?
Well, the reason government gives you tax loopholes is very simply because those are tax incentives, and of course those people use them legally as well as illegally. But in Canada, they're very, very, very liberal to guys who are from the B quadrant like me to come and invest in Canada. I just don't keep my money there. So you can do the same thing living there as long as you're a B quadrant person versus an E or S quadrant person. So you really do have to know which way the government favors. And the government of Canada punishes severely the employee. It's horrifying. But it also, the U.S. government punishes employees also, but it punishes the poor employee more than the rich employee. So you really do have to be aware. I mean, this stuff of saying to your child, go to school and get a job, you're basically making them a mule, you know, a tax, an animal, a beast of burden for the government. And that doesn't make any sense. That's why I don't want a job. That's why I don't want a salary. I'd rather have royalty income from my books, and the royalty income from my books is transferred magically to a legal corporation, and that legal corporation then also receives income from my real estate investments, and voila, the tax consequences are mitigated and disappear.
You have a brand new book out right now, and I believe it's number one as usual.
And number two.
when's the big date for number one?
I don't know. It's not a very popular book today.
It's not?
Well, it's called Rich Dad's Prophecy, and I'm taking a hammering from, you know, those money magazines, and they hate me. The stockbrokers don't like me. Financial planners don't like me. You know.
That's a good way to be.
Well, I don't.
Yeah. So, just quickly, the book is called Prophecy. Yes.
Right.
Lead us through that one. What is the prophecy? What's happening there and why?
Well, first of all, you know, when people think prophecy is about the future, really what prophecy is about something that's already happened. And because this thing has happened, it's going to affect our future. So it's like having sex and getting pregnant. You know in the future you'll have a long-term liability called a kid, you know? You don't have sex, and you won't have that long-term liability. You know, anyway. But in 1974, President Gerald Ford signed into law the ERISA Act, which by the 1980s became known as the 401k. In Canada is known as the RRSP. In Australia is known as the superannuation. In Singapore is called CPF, Social Provident Fund. But basically, it was a savings plan for people who needed money when they retired. So what prophecy is about is it's about the flaw in that 1974 law. And the real flaw begins because anytime the government tries to teach you how to be an investor, you know it's flawed. And basically, they got into cahoots with the big houses such as Merrill, Solomon, Citibank, and those guys. And the lobbyists, I'm not saying they're guilty or wrong, I would do the same thing, but basically they said to the average person, the average worker, employee, who had no financial knowledge, you now need to be an investor. In other words, you're in the E quadrant, and the law forced you to become an investor without the education. So prophecy is about the biggest stock market crash in history that is still coming. And the reason this past crash between 2000 and 2002 hasn't been that big is because the baby boomers are still in their 50s. They're still holding on to worthless stock. I mean, how many people do you know are still hoping and praying that their stocks will come up in value? I mean, they've been screwed big time. But they haven't sold simply because they're still hoping, because their financial planners have told them to buy, hold, and pray, that eventually that price of stock will come back up. And it might, but it also is going to start coming down around 2010 to 2016 when the baby boomers have to start selling. And then by 2016, the 1974 law requires by law that you have to start selling when you turn 70. So in 2016, the first baby boomer in America turned 70. In that year alone, 700,000 baby boomers turned 70. Now, not all of them have a 401k, but a lot of them do, and a lot of them are going to be required to start selling. Then in 2017, another 700,000 U.S. baby boomers turned 70, and they're going to be required to sell. Now, the financial planners tell you, so don't worry, they won't sell. They also say that, you know, the baby boomers' parents are going to die, so they, you know, they're going to, the baby boomers are going to inherit trillions of dollars. And they also say the Mexicans are going to start investing in our stock market. And I always find that kind of funny. Well, every time a financial planner or a stockbroker or some guy with a crystal ball starts telling me about the future, why I don't have to worry, I just ask them this one question. The question I ask somebody who tells me about the future is this. I say, will you guarantee it? Will you guarantee that the stock market will stay up? And of course, there's not a person on earth that will guarantee the stock market will stay up. But I will guarantee you this. Personally, I will guarantee you the market will come down. Why will it come down? Because stock markets always come down. They always go up, and they always come down. So it's really ridiculous for a person to buy, hold, and pray that the market goes up. I mean, you must be smoking something to believe that, or you're probably a big Harry Potter fan. You know what I mean? You're not in touch with reality. So that's what prophecy is about. And it's not about doom and gloom. It's about how you can do other things rather than put your money in a mutual fund or unit trust, as they call them in Australia. I mean, they're the riskiest of all investments. Yet, in 1974, the U.S. government said, thou shall buy mutual funds. And, of course, behind that thou shall was the banks, investment bankers, and Wall Street saying this is a good idea because they're going to make trillions of dollars in fees. So that's why that whole thing was done, and the poor average schmo is never going to be able to retire. Worst of all is the American 401k has medical attached to it. At least in Canada, you have some form of socialized medicine or so-so medicine. But in America, we don't have that. The 401k has no medicine attached to it. And after 65, your greatest single expense is medical. And so that's why America is cruising for a major, major, major problem. It's a bunch of old guys without any money and no medical. And that's what we're cruising to in 10 years. That's what prophecy is about.
Sounds great.
That's why I have companies in Canada.
Yeah, then you're going to come to Canada and pay taxes, all right?
No, I just have companies there.
You know what, Robert, one of the things we do at many of our conferences and we did at Millionaire School, which I'm sure those guys who were there remember, is we had seven, in fact, multi-millionaires who came up to the stage and we asked them very specific questions around their own success, their personal life, their personal traits, their own habits, their own ways of thinking, their own specialized knowledge. And I want you to kind of pretend, if you don't mind, for a little bit here that, you know, you're up on stage here with us and you are, as we all know, a multi ad infinitum millionaire. And I know that, you know, when I first was working with you and met you and you were teaching, at that point in time, you'd gone through a couple of high-level successes and then not, say, similar to myself, and then you were teaching, and then you really started to get on the road. So I want you, as if we were kind of like your little ducklings here, tell us, you know, what it is that you believe are your, you know, few key secrets to your own success, your own beliefs or your own traits or your own specialized knowledge. What are the real critical pieces that you would pass down to us and say, this is how I did it, this is what I believe, this is who I am. If you do the same thing, I believe it would assist you too.
All right, I mean, that's easy for me. When I was in school, I was labeled as stupid and incompetent and lazy. And in fact, Mike, my best friend and Rich Dad's son, he and I were hauled up in front of the whole school, our high school in Hawaii. And the teacher said, I'm not going to waste my time on these two losers anymore because they're never going to amount to anything. And it really kind of hurt when you're like 17 years old. And yet Mike became a billionaire and I became a multimillionaire. And I really took the teacher's advice to heart. I mean, I am really slow. You know, that's why I was a helicopter pilot, not a jet pilot. So I think what it was when you look at the book, The Cash Flow Quadrant, you know, the four quadrants, I had to ask myself, number one, which quadrant did I have the most chances of success in? You know, as an employee, there's no way I could kiss butt, climb the ladder. There's absolutely no way. On top of that, being incompetent and lazy, I was not going to get promoted anyway. So then I figured that the B quadrant was the best place because if you're a business owner, you don't have to be the smartest guy. In fact, being smart is a handicap in the B quadrant. If you're real smart, you're oftentimes in the S quadrant with the smart guys. That's where the doctors, accountants, and real smart technicians are. So I had to be true to myself. Not being smart and being slow, I had to dedicate myself to the B and the I quadrant and to my education. So today, I might read a book three times. This morning, I was at the gym listening to a tape I've listened to four times. And it is just pure faith and dedication to learning. And that's why I congratulate all of you for being there and studying with Harv. It is your dedication to your education that actually gets you ahead. In retrospect, when I look behind, I see some of my friends who were a lot smarter. Remember the kids in high school were a lot smarter than me. You know, I mean, they're far behind simply because they stopped learning once they graduated from college. And my education continued on. And the biggest education of all is experience. I mean, the way we are designed to learn is by making mistakes. And Harv has said to you, I've made it and I lost it. And even last year, I lost two companies, two public companies. I lost them because I screwed up. And most people would take that as a defeat. Yet, most people have never lost two publicly listed companies, both on Toronto. But and most guys are so afraid of making mistakes, they don't learn anything. And that's why you don't learn. So I would say the secret of my success is I'm willing to take huge risks. I'm willing to make mistakes. I'm willing to admit my mistake. I'm willing to learn from the mistake. But also I'm dedicated to my education. Harv says I travel a lot, which I do. And one of the reasons I travel a lot is very simply because I can sit on a plane and read. And I read very slowly. I'm a very slow reader. In fact, I flunked out of high school twice in English because I can't read and write. But I never let that stop me, exactly as Harv's saying. If you're a wizard, you'll find a way to do it. So I flunked out of high school twice because I can't read and I can't write, yet I have six books of the New York Times bestsellers, and they're bestsellers throughout the world. So if I could say this much, I basically took being slow and incompetent and I made it an asset. That's all I did. And I just stayed slowly and plodded along, like the, you know, the turtle and the tortoise and the hare story. I'm really the tortoise that just kept going. That's the only difference. But I kept going in the B's and I quadrants. But you can be successful in any quadrant as long as you stick to it.